1 to 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 22. Nyatasya kasci daita pratipa na kyati bandhu na paro na chasva. Samasya sarvatra niranjanasya sukhe naraka kute eva roshaha. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed toward all living entities. Therefore, no one is very dear to him, and no one is a great enemy for him. No one is his friend, and no one is his relative. Being unattached to the material world, he has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred for so-called distress. The two terms, happiness and distress, are relative. Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no question of distress. Text 23. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Sukhaya, dukkhaya, hitahitaya, sukhaya, dukkhaya, hitahitaya, sukhaya, dukkhaya, hitahitaya, bandhaya, mokshaya, cha. Mrityu janmana, bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana, bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana, sharirinam, samsritaye, vakalpate, sharirinam samsmitaye vakalpate. Sharirinam samsmitaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Sukhaya dukkhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharirinam samsmritaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Sukhaya dukkhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharirinam samsmritaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Sukhaya dukkhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharirinam samsmritaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Sukhaya dukkhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharirinam samsritaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchakti visarga esham. Sukhaya dukkhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana.
Sharirinam samsmitaye vikalpate.
Tathapi tachchatti
visargesham. Sukhaya dukhaya hitahitaya. Andhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharirinam samsmitaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchatti visargesham. Panchaya dukhaya hitahitaya. Anthaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharirinam samsmitaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchatti visargesham. Sukhaya dukhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharinam samsmitaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchatti visargesham. Sukhaya dukhaya hitahitaya. Chantaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Shariram samsmitaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchatti visargesha. Sukhaya dukhaya hitahitaya. Chantaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharinam samsmitaye vakalpate. Tathapi tachchatti visargesha. Sukhaya dukhaya hitahitaya. Bandhaya mokshaya cha mrityu janmana. Sharinam samsmitaye vakalpate.
Tathapi,
still,
that shakti
of the Lord's energy,
visargaha,
the creation,
esham,
of these
conditioned souls,
sukhaya,
for the happiness,
dukkhaya,
for the distress,
hita ahitaya,
for the profit and loss,
bandhaya,
for the bondage,
mokshaya,
for the liberation,
cha,
also,
mrityu,
of death,
janmana,
and birth,
sharirinam,
of all those who accept material bodies.
Samsritaye,
for the repetition.
Avakalpate,
acts. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although the Supreme Lord is unattached to our happiness and distress according to karma, and although no one is his enemy or favorite, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of his material potency. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. Purport. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate doer of everything, in his original transcendental existence, he is not responsible for the happiness and distress or bondage and liberation of the conditioned souls. These are due to the results of the fruitive activities of the living entities within this material world. By the order of a judge, one person is released from jail and another is imprisoned. But the judge is not responsible for the distress and happiness of these different people is due to their own activities. Although the government is ultimately the supreme authority, the justice is administered by the departments of the government, and the government is not responsible for the individual judgments. Therefore, the government is equal to all the citizens. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is neutral to everyone, but for the maintenance of law and order, his supreme government has various departments which control the activities of the living entities. Another example given in this regard is that lilies open or close because of the sunshine, and thus the bumblebees enjoy or suffer. But the sunshine and the sun globe are not responsible for the happiness and distress of the bumblebees. 22. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed toward all living entities. Therefore, no one is very dear to him, and no one is a great enemy for him. No one is his friend, and no one is his relative. Being unattached to the material world, he has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred for so-called distress. The two terms, happiness and distress, are relative. Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no question of distress. 23. Although the Supreme Lord is unattached to our happiness and distress, according to karma, and although no one is his enemy or favorite, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of his material potency. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. This is a continuation of Maharaj Chitraketu. Having been cursed by Mother Parvati, he has now come down from his flying chariot and offered his respects to her and very graciously accepted her pronouncement of a curse for him to become a demon. And here he's expressing his very high realization of the philosophy that anything that happens to him is obviously the desire of the Lord, and there is no blame attached to anyone else. It is his own karma which is causing such things to happen, and the desire of the Lord. In the purport, four or five times Prabhupada mentions the words responsibility. The Lord is not responsible for happiness and distress. The judge is not responsible because it's due to the people's own activities, their judgments. And similarly, the government is also not responsible. And the last, at the end of the purport, the example is given of the lilies open and close because of the sunshine. And when they're open, then the bees can get the nectar out. And when they close, then the bees cannot. But the sunshine is not responsible for the happiness or distress of the bees. So this theme of responsibility and who is actually to blame for any situation in our lives. This was discussed also yesterday by Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj very nicely. So similarly, today's verse also is on a similar topic. So I was struck by this term responsible because four times Prabhupada mentions it. And it's a kind of, in the modern day, taking responsibility is very, people are allergic to taking responsibility. No one wants to be responsible for themselves or for anything that goes wrong in their, in their family, in their situation. There's always someone to blame. There's always some reason that this happened. It wasn't my fault. I'm perfect. How can something bad happen? But in this kind of philosophy, there's no rational explanation for why things happen. Everything just seems to be by chance, and people get disturbed by that. How a Vaishnava should accept various events in life is shown here by Maharaj Chitraketu, very humbly taking it as mercy of the Lord. There was an incident, a little mundane example, but it struck me when I saw this word responsible mentioned so many times, and this principle of karma. Because nowadays, as we can see in 2015, people are more and more, all over the world, people are more familiar and more interested in these topics. Now, in the West, people are very much into yoga, karma, reincarnation. They're become popular topics. When Srila Prabhupada first went to America, they were very novel concepts. But nowadays, people are much more familiar with these terms. So, in 1999, there was a man in England whose name is Glenn Hoddle. Does anyone know who Glenn Hoddle is? If you don't know, that's good, because it's material news, but you know, so Glenn Hoddle, he was the manager of the English soccer team. So that's a very big, prestigious position, you know, the national team. They're very enthusiastic about sport and soccer. So he was a manager, which is a very responsible, prominent, high-profile public figure. So in one interview, he made a comment. He believed in karma and reincarnation. So he was telling the interviewer that, you know, you and I, we're born with two hands, 2 feet, and half-decent brains. But there are so many people in this world who, you know, have born with some disabilities, and they're not able to function fully, capably. And, you know, this is because of some karma coming from their previous life. So when a devotee hears such a thing, we think, yeah, of course, you know, that's just obvious. And that's, you know, that's how we see things. But there was a huge outcry against this person for saying such a thing. And the people who had disabilities were saying, you know, he's mocking us, he's devaluing our position in society. And there were, you know, big, even the prime minister was commenting, and different ministers were commenting. Eventually he was sacked from his job because of his casual comment that, you know, he believes in reincarnation, he believes in karma. Because people were so outraged, you know, they don't want to take responsibility for any bad situation in their lives. So it's a very tricky subject. How do you give this knowledge without offending anyone? They take offense that we did something wrong, therefore we are suffering in some, you know, disabled condition. You know, they have disabled games, disabled Paralympics, disabled Olympics, all sorts of things are going on to show that the disabled people can still be very active. But ultimately, they're in a difficult situation. Their body or their mind doesn't function properly, and therefore they're not able to live a healthy life as most other people. So as devotees, we know this is because of karma. They must have done something bad. Therefore, they were born or had an accident and are disabled to some extent. So unfortunately, this man was sacked from his job for such a belief. And there were some commentators, you know, as is usual in any public event like this, people have so many different opinions. There were some reporters from India, and they were saying, you know, in our country, if he said this, no one would think twice, because we all believe in reincarnation and karma. In fact, half the world believes in it. But somehow the people at that time in England were, you know, not educated in these subjects, and therefore there was such an outcry, and he had to resign, or actually was sacked. So how a devotee should feel in these kind of situations. You know, we know that we're supposed to be humbler than a blade of grass. We should tolerate anything that comes towards us. So that's for one's own, in one's own introspection in any situation, that is what a Vaishnava is supposed to do. And by doing that, one can actually get great mercy of the Lord. And there's a famous verse in Lord Brahma's prayers, Tate Nukampam Susimikshamano. Prabhupada would quote this many times, that if one simply tolerates whatever comes to him by the arrangement of the Lord, tolerates his karma, and doesn't try to counteract it, you know, going to great extent to counteract it, then he'll become eligible for the mercy of the Lord. He'll inherit the property of the Lord, ultimately. So for Vaishnava, that's our motto. That's how we're supposed to deal with things. But this philosophy shouldn't be used to point fingers at others or to make fun that, oh, so-and-so is suffering because he did something bad. You know, look at me, I'm so much better. That's also a misapplication of this philosophy. For oneself, Vaishnava is supposed to be very humble and tolerant, but if he sees another devotee is put into distress, then it's our duty to take all action to rectify the situation. You know, sometimes in our society, tolerance has been misapplied, and devotees have been put into difficulty and not treated properly, and they've been advised, oh, you should just tolerate, it's your karma, just, you know, be happy. But that's actually not the right understanding. If another Vaishnava is suffering, he's in difficulty, then we have to take action, we have to try to help them. If it happens to ourselves, then we'll hope that the other Vaishnavas will help us. If they don't, then we just accept whatever comes to us. So in a proper Vaishnava society, if all the relationships are solid, seniors, juniors, equals, then then the Vaishnavas will look after each other. If one Vaishnava is in trouble, the others will take care. If oneself gets into some difficult situation, then the other Vaishnavas will come to our rescue. So, therefore, when Vaishnava is paradukkha-dukkhi, he doesn't enjoy when other people are suffering. He feels empathy, sympathy, when he sees other people suffering. He takes all recourse to try to help everybody. And not that Vaishnava is so tolerant that he neglects everybody and, you know, just let them all go to hell and let me worry about my own spiritual life. You know, this is not a very developed understanding. The higher principle is to always try to help all living entities to get out of the suffering condition of life. So ultimately, for oneself, one should take full responsibility, and one should be always trying to help other people who are in a suffering condition, especially if they're in the Vaishnava community. So this was the first topic that I wanted to discuss, the responsibility. And in text 22, the first line talks about how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed toward all living entities. So when I saw this line, I couldn't help but be reminded that in a couple of chapters, the first chapter of 7th canto is entitled, "The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone." So that's the name of the chapter, first chapter of 7th canto. So now we're at chapter 17 of 6th canto. There are just two more chapters about Diti and the Pumsavana ceremony. Then we enter into the 7th canto. So the 7th canto continues on from this story of Vritrasura, Chitriketu. And Pariksit Maharaj asks a question to Shukadev Goswami that, you know, he's very astonished by how the Lord killed Vritrasura. And the question is about the Lord being partial. And this question comes up many times in Bhagavatam. How is the Lord partial to the devotees and against the demons? You know, the Supreme Lord in this verse, he said he's not attached to anybody. He has nothing to gain. He's not responsible. So then why is he apparently favoring one party and against the demons? So this is a very nice question. So Shukadev Goswami begins to reply, and he quotes Yudhishthira Maharaj. We know in the Rajasuriya sacrifice, when Shishupal was killed by Krishna, right in front of everybody, his atma merged into the lotus feet of the Lord. And everyone was witness to that. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was astonished to see this, and he asked Narad Muni, who was also present in front of everyone, that how is it that this demon Shishupal, he's got this Sayujya Mukti, which even the great yogis and jnanis and tapasvis cannot achieve after so many births. And, you know, my understanding is that there are great kings like Maharaj Vena, who was always blaspheming the Lord. He was destroyed, killed by the Brahmanas. But the Shishupal, he was habituated to blaspheming the Lord. It says even before he could speak properly, from such a young age, he was criticizing Krishna. So how is it that he was getting this great fortune of Sayujya Mukti? So Shukadeva Goswami uses this story to reply to Maharaj Pariksit's question. And he narrates how, Narad Muni starts to narrate how, takes up the story of Hiranyakashipu. And then we know of 7th canto will continue the instructions of Prahlad Maharaj and the appearance of Lord Nrisingadev. So Hiranyakashipu also felt like this. When Hiranyaksha was killed, then he was very disturbed. Hiranyaksha was his younger brother, and he was killed by Lord Varaha. So Hiranyakashipu was furious that Lord Vishnu has killed his brother. And he started blaming the Lord, that we know that the Lord is in everyone's heart, he's the supreme, he's supposed to be equal to everyone. But just see, he's taken the side of the demigods to kill my brother. Now, this means that he's in Maya. He actually directly says, Lord Vishnu is now in Maya. And therefore, if he's playing dirty, we can also play dirty. And this is his justification. So he instructs all his demoniac companions, now you go to earth, destroy all the yajñas, harass all the brahmanas. In this way, the demigods will be, with the yajña stopped, the demigods will lose their power, and Lord Vishnu also will become weak, and I'll kill Lord Vishnu. In this way, we'll get revenge for my brother's death. So, we can see how the Mayavadi tendency is demoniac, that the Lord is in Maya, that Maya is superior to the Lord. is actually a philosophy that Hiranyakashipu also partakes of. So he sends his demons off to create havoc in the universe. But actually the Lord is impartial, as Prabhupada speaks about in various ways in this purport. And so I was meditating on this topic, and how all the various demons that the Lord killed, you know, how that actually came about. Like, we know that Hiranyaksha, he challenged Lord Varaha when Hiranyaksha had caused the earth to fall into the bottom of the ocean. Then Lord Bor, Varahadev, he lifted the earth up, and as he was retrieving the earth, then Hiranyaksha challenged him to battle. It wasn't that Lord Varaha went and knocked on Hiranyaksha's door to fight. So maybe we can just, all of us, take a few seconds to think about all the various demons that Krishna killed in Vrindavan, out of Vrindavan, even other incarnations. And let's see if we can find any that the Lord actually instigated the battle. You know, so just take a few seconds, go through the various demons, you know, Putana, Bakasura, Agasura, Kaliya, Pralambasura. Did any of them Lord go and attack? Sorry? Even when he went to Mathura. Now we see most of the Vrindavan demons were sent by Kamsa, pretty much all of them, starting from Putana. Krishna didn't go to Putana, Krishna didn't go to Vatsasura, Bakasura, Renakasura, none of them. They all were sent by Kamsa to attack Krishna and to kill him. And to not only that, they also made great disturbance in Vrindavan. One thing is to attack Krishna himself, but when the devotees are disturbed, then Krishna is even more protective. It's a bigger offense to harass the devotees. Like Arishtasura came and the whole of Vrindavan was disturbed. But Krishna never made the first move, so to speak. And when children are fighting, they say, "Oh, he started it. But Krishna never started it. It was always Kamsa sending all the demons to Vrindavan. Even when Krishna went to Mathura, you know, Kuvalayapita was standing in the way. He even warned the Mahout, "Please move aside your elephant, otherwise I'll send you to Yamaraj's abode." He gave him a chance, but they didn't take it. They walked into the wrestling arena and they were challenged by Chanara Mushtika. "We hear that you boys wrestle in the forest. Come show us your prowess." And Krishna said, "You know, we're just boys. We play with equals, our own size, our own age. You are great wrestlers, you know. It's not an equal match." And anyway, the Leela continues. Even when Krishna went to Dwarka, you know, before that Jarasandha attacked 18 times. Krishna went to Dwarka. We never hear that he called Balaram, he called Satiki, he said, "Get the army ready, Daruka, get my chariot ready, let's go on a conquest. Let's go on a campaign and conquer all the kings around us." Never. Krishna was happily sitting, you know, doing his pastimes in Dwarka. Dvivida Gorilla came, he started harassing, therefore Balaram retaliated. Or Shalva, he attacked Dwarka when Krishna's away, so therefore Krishna came and killed him. So to say that Krishna's against the demons is not actually fair, because Krishna never instigated any of these battles. It was always in response to either personally being attacked or his devotees being harassed and attacked by the demons. So therefore, Krishna is impartial. He says in Bhagavad Gita, "If you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly." This way, Hiranyakashipu's philosophy, he very conveniently ignored that Hiranyaksha was the one who challenged Lord Varaha. Varaha didn't go to challenge Hiranyaksha. He just went to save the earth. So, this way the Lord is impartial, and all the demons that he killed, not just Shishupal. Shishupal got the Sayujya Mukti in front of everyone. Also Agasura, when Agasura died, everyone saw the spirit soul merge into the body of the Lord. And this is given in a bit more detail in Brihad Bhagavatamrita chapter 5, when Narad Muni meets the Pandavas, then he's glorifying their relationship with Krishna. And he goes through these various demons and says that, you know, Krishna is so merciful in this incarnation. In the previous incarnations, he didn't give prema bhakti. And he says the first person to get prema bhakti bestowed by the Lord himself was Prahlad in the Shringa Leela, which we'll hear about in upcoming months. Prior to that, there was no prema given to to any of the Lord's, through any of the other incarnations. And then Lord Ram, he gave Prema Bhakti to Hanuman, Sugriva, and Guha, Vibhishana, these other personalities. But Krishna, he's so much more merciful that he's given higher level of prema, even to the plants and the trees, and even to these demons. You know, these demons who were killed by Krishna, it's not that they were just killed and they had to take another birth and, you know, be born in some bad situation. But by having that association with Krishna, personally face to face fighting with Krishna, they were all given at least Sayujya Mukti. Prabhupada also says that, and Narad Muni also expands on this. They were given Sayujya Mukti, some were promoted directly to Vaikuntha, and the ones who went to the Brahma Jyoti, they could progress from there to Vaikuntha, perhaps, that's also possible. So these great demons, you know, they also got benefit from Krishna. That way he's impartial. He gives benefit to his devotees who worship him, and he gives great benefit to the demons who try to kill him. So in that way, he's also impartial. He gives mercy and liberation to all these people, even if they approach him in the wrong way. And of course, the most graphic example is Putana, because she was the first demon that Krishna killed, and she came with very murderous intentions, you know, planning to kill Krishna himself, smearing poison. And what happened to her? You know, Krishna, she was able to sit Krishna on her lap, and Krishna killed her, but he didn't just kill her and condemn her to hell. He gave her the position of a nurse, you know, like a super elevated, you know, intimate associate. So this kind of mercy wasn't seen in the other incarnations. And in the third canto, the famous verse that Uddhava quotes when he's discussing about this pastime, Aho bakiyam stanakalukutam jighamshaya payat apyasadhi lebe gatim dhatrichitam tandonyam kamva dayalum sharanam brajema. The last line is very beautiful. Kamva dayalum. Who should I take shelter of who's more merciful than Krishna? That even to this rakshasi, demoness, Putana, Baki, she's the younger sister of Bakasura and Agasura. You cannot imagine what kind of family they had growing up. You know, your sister is Putana, your brother is Baka and Aga. It's quite a, you know, colorful childhood they must have had. So she was given the position of nurse. You know, how merciful is Krishna? And the Nagapatnis, they also mentioned this, that when Kaliya was being beaten by Krishna's feet, and they were amazed that even Lakshmi Devi, she's doing austerities to get the dust of your feet, and how is it that this envious snake is so favored by you that he's being repeatedly kicked by your lotus feet, that even the mark of the Lord's foot was imprinted on Kaliya's hoods. Like that also, Narad Muni, in the purport, it's expanded on that. Kamsa, you know, he was personally had the foot of the Lord on his chest. Chanara Mushtika were embraced by the Lord, you know, just like the cowherd boys are embraced by the Lord. So they all got so much grace and favor, even by being inimical to Krishna. And actually in the beginning of the seventh canto, Narad Muni gives his opinion that the total absorption of these demons in Krishna is even more than, he feels, even more than the devotees are absorbed in Krishna. You know, by being envious and fearful of the Lord, their mind is actually more absorbed in him than the average devotee, you can say. Even Kamsa was like that. Everywhere he would go, he would think of Krishna. Every shadow, you know, he'd think, oh, Krishna has come to get me. So they're totally absorbed. And even though it's unfavorable, they're still able to get, you know, at least liberation or even promotion to Vaikuntha. So this is the particular supreme benediction of Krishna in his, you know, in his avatar, in his Swayam Krishna avatar. Whereas the previous incarnations, they killed the demons, but they didn't give liberation like this, like Krishna does. Of course, we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastimes, he's even more merciful than Krishna. And the most common example is given that Krishna wanted everyone to surrender, and then he would, you know, give them protection. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he doesn't demand anything. He would actually go out on the streets and just invite everyone to take prema, harinam, through the Sankirtan movement. Mar khe prem dai, emon doyal tu nai re. This is a very beautiful song. Doyal nitai chitanya, bole nashre amar man. So, it says that Mar khe, it's a very colloquial Bengali, even being beaten, he gives prema. So this is referring to the Jagai Madai pastime. Now, we know Nityanandaprabhu is Lord Balaram. So when Madai hurled the pot at Lord Nityananda, he didn't protect himself. He didn't try to dodge. He didn't manifest his club and smash it like he did when Vivida Gorilla was throwing rocks at Balaram. He took his club and was smashing it like baseball or something. But in Nityananda avatar, he didn't have that response. He simply accepted the beating of Madai. And he still begged him, please, you take prema, take the Harinam. Mar khe prem dai emon dayal tunai re. So we can see from that example how in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Lord Nityananda, you know, Balaram is generally, we see in Lord Balaram's pastimes, he gets angry quickly. You know, he doesn't tolerate insult. But Lord Nityananda, showing so much mercy, he accepted the beating of Madhai. And actually, Madhai was going to beat him again. Jagai was the one who stopped Madhai from repeating his offense. And again, it kind of comes around to the point we're making in the beginning. For himself, Nityananda Prabhu was tolerant and accepting of the beating. But when Lord Chaitanya came to hear, he immediately wanted to chastise and he was calling his Sudarshan Chakra to destroy Madhai. So Lord Nityananda, as we know, he reminded Mahaprabhu that, you know, in this incarnation, our job isn't to kill the demons. Otherwise, you're going to have to finish everybody. In this incarnation, Lord Chaitanya's mission is to destroy the demoniac mentality through the Harinam Sankirtan. So then when Madai, you know, begged forgiveness from Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, then they were delivered and became very prominent members of the associates of the Lord. So, although Krishna, he would give liberation to the demons, Lord Chaitanya is even more merciful, and he accepts them into his own fold and bestows upon them, you know, a much higher level of prema. So in this way, we're very fortunate to be coming in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is supremely merciful. I think I should end here, because it's almost 9:15, unless anyone has any question or comment. Oh no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Thank you very much, Prabhu.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah.
Very lovely. I was just meditating on the compassion of the Vaishnavas. With it generally, when some misfortune comes to the Vaishnav, then there's the first thing that we see in Bhagavatam, you know, like when Maharaja was cursed, was the sages came to his help and asked him. You know, they were compassionate and they knew actually how karma works, but they were. And they had the potency to say, well, we'll reverse the reaction. You don't deserve this, so we'll take it away from you. But And the same with Chitakatu as well. That the Vaishnava has shown that compassion. It's the first thing that comes in their minds is to show compassion to the living entities. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that you brought that subject up.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I can think of two instances that Krishna instigated the battle.
Okay, good.
One was Kaliyadamana. Krishna jumped into the lake to agitate him and started splashing. So, and the other one was he instigated the battle between Bhim and Jarasandha.
Okay.
So Krishna's
yes,
perfect.
Well.
It's Kaliya, nothing he doesn't do.
Kaliya had already.
Both. He can be merciful and they can instigate.
Kaliya had already poisoned the Yamuna, and the cowherd boys and cows were unconscious or, you know, semi-dead. So to protect them, therefore Krishna had to remove Kaliya from the Yamuna. But he didn't kill Kaliya. He's the only one actually who survived Krishna's attack. He kicked Kaliya. He gave him his mercy of his lotus feet, and he threw him out of Yamuna, drove him out. Jarasandha, 18 times Charasandha attacked Mathura and tried to kill Krishna and kill everyone in Mathura. So, of course, yeah, Krishna had a special purpose for killing Charasandha. And actually, Charasandha is one of the, in the purport of Virabhagavatamrita, Charasandha is mentioned there also, along with the other demons who were favored by Krishna, because Krishna went there personally to beg charity from him. And that way, Charasandha was glorified as such a, and actually, Charasandha felt very, very proud that, oh, look at Krishna, he's come to beg from me. You know, I'm superior, therefore I'm superior to Krishna. And he was really, you know, encouraged and puffed up by that. So in that way, he was actually glorified that Krishna had to beg charity from him. So yeah, Krishna did instigate. That was also on behalf of his dear devotees, the Pandavas. You know, for his devotees, then Krishna will do anything. He'll break his own promise, as he did on the battle of Kurukshetra, to protect Arjuna. So these are, I think we can still say that Krishna is impartial. But thank you for churning that a little bit. Maybe just the last point. When I was a very young devotee, I would hear stories about Harinams in Melbourne. So Gyana Samudra Prabhu was from Melbourne. And it was his job to protect the devotees from drunk people or people harassing the women. And at least it's a legend in my mind that, you know, he was very, you know, the devotees, they have a couple of kind of strong men at the back. They wouldn't dress in devotee clothes, so people would think they're just passers-by. And they would come to the protection of the Harinam parties if people would harass the ladies or, you know, try to throw beer or bottles at them or anything. Is that correct, Jonathan Samudra Prabhu? Right. So, in that sense, he's also been protecting the devotees for many years, like that. Hare Krishna. Granthrashman Bhagatam ki, Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanandi.